This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast. Should we start and go back to when you were diagnosed?
It was September 2021 when I was first diagnosed. I think it was the 24th. Actually, it seems like it happened a life ago, but actually when I look back, it's not been that long. To go and have an MRI scan and then to be called in and be told that you've got a brain tumor, it's a lot to digest. And my husband was actually away with his friends at the time that I got the diagnosis.
Yeah.
So that was a, do I tell him or do I just wait till he gets home?
Yeah. But
it's a lot to deal with. So I researched it all. The time I was working, and they were really good with me. And my boss said, just take the rest of the day off, do what you need to do, and we'll talk on Monday, because it was a Friday. And I just looked at the brain tumor Macmillan website, that I'd have to tell my parents, tell my husband, tell my friend. And I wanted to make sure that I had it correct in my head, because I knew that if I panicked, they'd be panicking as well.
Yeah.
Because you have all the negativity surrounding the brain tumor words. That weekend went past in a blur, automatic pilot, because I've got two boys. So it was remaining normal for them, just waiting for my husband to get back and tell him. And I phoned him whilst he was away, and I did tell him. And he said, oh, I'll come straight home. And I said, but you can't do anything. I said, I think we've got a couple of tough months coming up. So you stay out there with your friends and just live life, because it's going to be a bit tough when you get back.
You were having loss of balance and a problem with swallowing, and you're getting dizzy.
Yes, that's true. So my balance was off and I was feeling sick, but I go to the gym a lot. So I thought I was overtraining. I wasn't eating or drinking enough. I had a dull ache across my eyes, and I thought that was because I was tired and I needed to get to the opticians when I could do, because it was possibly my eyesight. And I had a pain down the side of my neck stemming from my ear. And again, I just thought that was because of my posture at my desk. And the feeling I had was of a tablet being stuck in my, and it would wake me up early hours of the morning. Quite painful, and it was a struggle to swallow.
Must have been quite scary. Want to breathe.
Originally I thought, oh, perhaps it's like a bit of a heartburn, so you Google symptoms for heartburn. I thought, I took a couple of headache tablets last night, maybe one's got a little bit dark. And so again, you look for reasons as to why it is what it is. And then eventually I started to lose my hearing in my right ear. And at that point, I thought, this is when I need to go to the doctor. But it was during COVID, so it was all a telephone call, and they weren't able to look in my ear, and they didn't associate the swallowing, the balance, the feeling sick with it. I was diagnosed with a ear infection. So I had antibiotics.
Gosh, so they diagnosed you over the phone.
Exactly. And this was see part of the problem that everyone had during COVID. And when it didn't go, I spoke to them again and they prescribed some more stronger antibiotics. And by the third time, I was like, something not right. I don't feel myself. I was, most of the time, it was a couple of times a week of getting up with the pain of swallowing. And eventually they saw me with masks and everything, and they sent me to the ear, nose and throat. I went for the MRI. They saw my balance was off, and that was how they diagnosed it. But it was one of those things that I think I was still very oblivious to it. And I came out of the MRI scanner and I jokingly said to them, oh, did you find anything? Did you find a brain?
Oh, no.
And they just said, oh, if you'd like to take a seat outside.
God. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's friendly of them.
Always when they bring you a cup of tea, you have to, or do they want a tea or a coffee? You think, oh gosh.
Yeah, this is it. I was sat outside in the waiting room and they came out and they said, let's go somewhere quiet. And I was like, oh, okay, if you want confidentiality and everything. And then they said that they weren't an actual consultant, but they think they may have found something. And the best thing for me to do, they handed me a CD of my MRI scan and a letter and said, the best thing that we suggest is you go straight to A&E. At that point, I was like, really? What do I need to go there for? I looked on the letter and it had mass on the brain. Oh. And I'm like, no, maybe that's just they're making it more serious than it actually is. So I think I played it down quite a lot because with everything else that was going on with COVID at the time, I was like, I'm not as bad as the COVID patients, that the NHS have got enough to do. And I was like, oh, I need to pick up the boys from school. I'll go later. And I did go later in the evening. And they said that normally when they see something like this on the scan, they would keep me in hospital. But because I looked well, and because of COVID, they said that they wanted to send me home and get a proper MRI consultant to have a look at my scan. And so I came home and didn't think anything else of it. Phoned me and said, we need to see you and have a face-to-face meeting, which is then when they officially diagnosed it. It all happened quite quickly. I was told on the Friday, and on the following Tuesday, I went in and met my neurosurgeon and explained to myself and my husband what it was, how big it was, and that at that time, the only option for me was surgery because of the size of it.
So they saw that you had fluid on the brain as well?
Yes.
And they decided, we're going to deal with the fluid first and then we'll deal with the tumour after?
Yeah, that's right. The immediate attention was to reduce the fluid from the brain, because that's something that can be, if left, it can be life-threatening. So they decided that what they would do is they would fit a shunt. So I went in early October to have a shunt fitted to my brain. And that means that there's a valve going from my brain to the stomach to let the fluid disperse.
Isn't that amazing that they can do something like that? I nearly had one of those myself, because I had fluid on the brain and they thought about having it. And I was like, how does that work? And they were like, oh, it comes out, it does its own thing, goes down in the tube. And I was like, does it cause a problem? They're like, people live with it.
That's right. You know, I said to them, how long would it be in for? And he said, you'll have it for the rest of your life. And I was, oh, okay. And he was like, but you can still carry on doing everything that you want to.
Yeah.
You can just carry on doing things as normal. And I went in, I had the 2-hour operation. I was in hospital for a couple of days. And the difference it made, the immediate impact was amazing. One of the tests that they got me to do was to stand with my arms out front and close my eyes. And when I first done that, I immediately fell to the right, which is the side that my tumour was on. And within 24 hours of having the shunt fitted, I'd done the same test and my balance had improved dramatically.
So then you had some kind of removal of the brain tumour after?
Yeah. And then, so they went to remove the tumour last February, so 2022. It was a 9-hour operation and they successfully managed to remove 95% of it. The remaining 5% is wrapped around my facial nerve and they decided to leave that because otherwise it would have caused me permanent facial palsy.
Yeah.
And I have regular MRI just to check that it doesn't grow. And they've said if it does grow back at any time, that's when I'd have radiotherapy. And they believe that would be able to remove it. But it's not life-threatening at the moment. That's why they decided to keep it there.
Have you had any further problems?
I lost the hearing in my right ear. I'm profoundly deaf in my right ear, which is my acoustic neuroma side. I have dry eye. It's all on the right-hand side, so I'm not able to cry out of that eye at all. It doesn't water when wind gets in there or anything like that. And I have no taste on the right side of my tongue, which is really bizarre. After the surgery and I was in hospital, the nutritionist came round because they like to make sure that you can swallow properly.
Yes.
And she gave me a strawberry yogurt and she said, yeah, you're swallowing fine. And she said, can you tell me what flavour it is? And I was like, vanilla. And again, it's all connected to the nerves. So it's great if I ever want to enter a chili contest.
I was about to say that. I could join a competition.
Be my secret weapon.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and then you do loads of charity. You could come and win these things.
That's very true.
Yeah.
It's just really bizarre. Like I love chocolate, but chocolate tastes like cardboard now. It's very strange. Trust me, it doesn't stop me from eating it.
Yeah. We used to believe you'll get the feeling or the sort of the softness.
I also struggle with fatigue. I think that's quite a common problem when you've had a brain injury of some sort.
Yeah.
And I have tinnitus in my ear 24/7 as well.
I have tinnitus now and I have to say it's just horrible. And it's so hard to explain to anyone what it's like.
Exactly.
It's being in a quiet place is not so nice. Like everyone's, I want some peace and quiet. And it's no, because all I hear is me. It's very annoying.
I think the only, when people have explained or asked me to explain that, I said it's like when you've gone to a nightclub or a loud concert.
Yeah.
And then you've come out at the end of the evening and your ears are just ringing constantly.
Yeah, but it's not as loud as that, but it's there and it's enough for you to be like, it's irritating and you can't, I wonder sometimes if, because we get anxious and stuff, is that part of because we can't shut down, like our brains just don't shut down and you have a noise and it just, if you've got anxiety, it's just another thing just to add on.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, Claire. I think because I never used to be an anxious person or find things overwhelming, but I tend to now. And I think, like you say, that's because it's constantly the noise. And because my brain is trying to always listen, always hears that, plus tries to pick up the noise or the conversation that's happening around me. And if more than three people are talking, completely throws me. And I just sit back and let them carry on the conversation because I struggle to hear when it's just one side anyway, along with the tinnitus.
Oh, I have exactly the same thing. If it starts to get three people talking, I actually normally leave the room. I'm like, oh gosh, I can't, because then you get the noise. You can't really distinguish between everyone's voices because they're just meshing into one. And then I actually leave the room. And I'm just like, okay, I'll come back in a minute.
Oh my goodness. You try to lip read as well because you can't hear them. It's so true. You do. It's one of those things that you don't realize it until you lose your hearing.
Yeah.
How much you try to lip read and how difficult it is, like you're saying, how different we all talk.
Yeah. Yeah. Something you were saying about anxiety, how are you trying to deal with that?
So I think my anxiety kicks in because it just takes me back to that time.
Yes.
And if I'm in a noisy and busy environment, again, anxiety kicks in. Or if I to go to a meeting with work and I knew that decisions had to be made, anxiety would kick in because sometimes my brain doesn't react as quick as it used to, or my focus is not quite as sharp as it is other days. that I think certainly when I was recovering, my husband was my comfort blanket. Everywhere I went, he would come with me. I'd hold his hand. And that's certainly not like me. I think the way I've dealt with it is I've tried to push myself out of my comfort zone, because I think my home is my safe haven, and you don't want to go outside your home because you don't know what's out there waiting, how noisy it is, anything like that. But I've forced myself to do things that I would have done previously.
Yeah.
And it might have taken me longer. And sometimes I might have had to have sat in the car for 10 minutes listening to calmer music or taking deep breath. But they're little goals that when you achieve them, it is something really positive for you.
I think you have to celebrate those little things because they're little wins.
Exactly. And I think I was very guilty, and I probably am still guilty of thinking, I used to be able to do that. And it's, I used to be able to do that, but I was slightly a different person then. And being able to, once I had my operation, being able to walk from one end of the garden to the other, it sounds so simple. Being able to do that without falling over or looking drunk was really positive. And I think that's a really important message, is that people have to take the small wins.
Have you found support from the NHS?
No, unfortunately not. And I don't think that's through any fault of the NHS. I did seek counselling from Macmillan. I had 6 sessions there. But then I think you go into you've had the treatment, you're on the road to recovery now, and it's wounds heal really well and really quick. And I have to say that certainly mine did. But I think mentally, it takes a lot longer. My surgeon always said to me that this is a marathon and not a sprint. And I didn't at the time really know what he meant. To me, it was like, I've had the tumor out and the wounds are going to heal and that's it. I can go back to my normal life. And I think that's the bit of support, that's the gap that's missing. Being able to talk to other survivors, and obviously you've got the Brain Tumor Charity and Banner and the Brain Tumor Research that are very good to talk to you about treatment and look at the options and for you to understand it. But I think it, knowing that you have other people around that are very like-minded and can go, we can relate to that. And the tiredness that you're feeling isn't because you're lazy, it's because your brain's working overtime.
Yeah.
And be able to help you and feel like it's a very safe environment for you to talk to other survivors, where you can share your experiences, understand what they're going through and how they possibly received support.
Yeah.
And that's certainly something that I wanted to give back. I followed Sarah Crosland a lot when I was diagnosed, and her story was inspirational, that I got in contact with Sarah through social media, and we've created a friendship there that...
Just to let the listeners know that Sarah has the same tumour as you, and so she has all the same problems that you have. You have a very similar story, and you're both very active. You both have come from being fit.
Absolutely. And when Sarah went from Land's End to John O'Groats, I followed the journey. And I think knowing that the life you had previously just needs to change, just needs to adapt a little bit, but actually nothing is impossible. And I think that's the thing that takes the time to understand it. I think the conversations that we had, it was both of us, it was really important to be able to identify this gap for patients, for survivors, and say, let's just get together. Let's set up a non-for-profit community. We set up the Beyond Recovery Project very much for survivors. And we've got a lot of people involved. We want to help people and to help them with a goal, to give them a purpose. If they used to be really active and then you find that you're perhaps not as active and your confidence goes, we want to be able to give people that goal to go, just let's go for a walk, let's go for a run. And in actual fact, next June, there's a small team of brain tumour survivors and myself included, Basara, and we're going to go up the Atlas Mountains.
Wow.
Which is a feat in itself. But it's good because it gives us all a focus and help us all realise that we can still achieve
things. Where can people find out more about the Beyond Recovery Project?
We are throughout the country. I'm actually based down in Hampshire and Sara and the rest of the team are further afield. And the website is www.recoveryproject.org. By all means, go there. You can subscribe to our newsletters to see what we're doing. You can go and read the stories about the team members. And we're not saying you're going to go and have a look at it and go, well, I want to do things. Just knowing that there's people there.
Yes.
And to gain some motivation or to be able to reach out to either one of us, Sarah, myself, or the Beyond Recovery on social media and drop us a message. Certainly, Sara and I, we tend to talk to people via Instagram and they might just message us and go, we're going to an MRI next week and I'm really anxious. Mm. And we can relate to them. And friends and family are amazing supporters, but sometimes the way you're feeling but don't want to talk to your friends or family, we can completely understand.
So what's the Instagram, your handle name? Is it the Beyond Recovery?
It's the Beyond Recovery Project. And by all means, if anybody wants to reach out, wherever they are in the country or in the world, we've had people from America contact us as well. Please feel free, because we all completely understand how people feel, what they're going through. And sometimes you just need that hand holding, or you need to just get it off the chest. We've had people write to us that are actually family members saying, I don't know how to support my husband or my girlfriend that's going through this at the moment. What shall I do? We provide support to anybody, really.
Okay. I'm just looking on the stuff that you guys are doing and I just think, gosh, you're going up mountains and I'm like, wow. I would love to have, but I'm like, would I hold everybody back? Because I would be so tired very easily. When people go and do these things, is it like a slow thing? No one's going to rush anybody. You get it. We know that this isn't easy for anybody.
Absolutely. It's not a race. It's not a competition. It's just being able to support each other. And we've all got disabilities, as we call them. Sara and I joke that she's deaf on the left side, I'm deaf on the right side.
Oh, right.
So we're just going to... Some people have balance issues continuing, so they use poles. And fatigue, definitely we all can relate to that. So it's not a race, not a competition. It's just getting to the top of that mountain and just... screaming if we want to, that we've achieved it. It won't be easy, but I think certainly what we've been through hasn't been easy, but
yes,
we've come out the other side.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, that we want to celebrate that and show people that you can do it. And it doesn't have to be walking up a mountain. Some of them are actually running Hadrian's Wall.
Oh, wow.
The 21st of October.
Yeah.
And if people want to join in that virtually, to support and go and walk the length of Hadrian's Wall that the team are doing, then they can go in and subscribe and join us in doing that. It's something that you don't have to be always active, have to have had previous training. It just means that nowadays if you want to get out and go for a walk, it's easier to do that and push yourself when you've got a goal to focus on.
Do people do this as a voluntary? Is this a voluntary thing, or is it, do people need to donate? Is it something, with your equipment and stuff, is this something where people can donate to support these things, or do people do it separately and have fundraising?
No, what we're doing is the Beyond Recovery project will be looking to fund it for those that are going, where they are brain tumour survivors. So we are looking for sponsorship to help with that. And any donations, you can go onto our website and make a donation. It is voluntary, but we are looking for sponsorship and fundraising as part of it. Hadrian's Wall will go towards that. All sale of our merchandise goes towards that. And we're just contacting businesses at the moment to see if they'd like to help and support us going forward.
Yeah. So again, it's the beyondrecoveryproject.org.
Yeah.
So if anybody out there wants to do some support this, then yeah, definitely reach out and someone, that'd be great. I'm looking forward to seeing all the photos. It makes me feel
more welcome to join us, Claire.
Do you know what? I think I'm busy on that day. I think I'm sleeping that day. I think one day I'd like to do something like that. Most of the charity stuff, I've done the little runs that you do, like the Santa run, and I've done my mum passed away a year ago from cancer, but we used to do all the Santa run, the hero run and things, which was with the brain tumor research. And I just remember thinking, like, how do people do this all the time?
Yeah, I think certainly what we want to do is we want to make sure that it's not just about walking up a mountain or going for a marathon. We want to organise retreats and camps as well, allowing survivors to connect with each other and even families, because it's not just the survivors it affects. It's also the families. I always say that me having the operation, I had the easy job. I slept for 9 hours.
Yeah.
It was my friends and family on the outside that were pacing up and down.
Yes.
That have it difficult. And to be able to just introduce people to each other, where they can help and support each other, because it does have a ripple effect. You know, my youngest, he still gets really anxious when I go for my MRI scan.
Yeah.
So it's not just us that it affects a lot of people. We want to include and build this community up.
Yes, it's a community. So it's, yeah,
you know, the brain tumor patients, but plus their family as well. So we're looking at retreats and camps so that they can all connect with each other.
That's a really great idea, and it's really lovely that you're doing. And again, Aunt Sarah, it doesn't surprise me that she's doing this and that she's put this together, because she was looking for something, wasn't she? She could give back, because she's been wanting to do that for a long time. And it's really nice to see this come together. It looks
absolutely
really like it's doing great. It's doing really successful.
The Beyond Recovery Project really is Sarah's baby.
Yeah.
And I think when she's done the Land's End to John O'Groats one, I think it got her to inspire to do a lot of other things. She likes to give back to people. Mm. And certainly when she spoke to me about this idea and the Atlas Mountains, I was like, I'm just saying, yeah, I'll ask all the questions afterwards.
No,
I'm
you're a perfect you. Match. You two together is a perfect match.
Yeah, I think so. There's often many times that we're just coming up with all these ideas and then we're like, oh, we're absolutely shattered now.
Yes. We're off to go to sleep. I'm now 14 years since my surgery, but I still have problems with my fatigue. I still have it. I really thought, oh, I'll be fine. I'll get there. I'll go back to as close as to what I used to be, but it's just actually never happened. I still can get very overwhelmed. And I don't know if that's because I'm partially blind now or whether because I'm on medication for epilepsy. And I don't know if that's what that causes that, but I'm like, it's actually quite surprising, or I get quite surprised that I haven't gone back to how I was. But I've also found that where we do these kind of communities that come together, it doesn't make me feel so guilty. because I think I've always had that, but I feel like no, because we're still trying to do things to make a change. We're not just sitting there not trying.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the things that we're all guilty of is going, I'm going to go back to normal, whatever normal is, but I'm going to go back to being the old me.
Yes.
And actually, we can't.
No.
And
we haven't been able to,
No, that's right. You need to be able to grieve the old you and go, but actually, what about the new me? What does the new me want to do now?
Oh, thank you very much for sharing.
Thank you for your support. And just, go to the website, click on it. You can subscribe to our newsletter, find out all the events that are going on. And please, if anyone wants to reach out to us on social media, they can do that as well. But thank you for allowing me to share my story today, Claire.
Thank you for sharing. Bye.
Thanks, Claire.
Bye. This is the Auntie Anne Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie Anne Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast.